water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Back in the late 1980s, I had the honor of serving on the National Council on Disability, which helped author the first draft of the Americans with Disabilities Act, commonly known as the ADA. Since then, the ADA has helped millions of Americans with disabilities access fair housing, obtain better jobs, and accomplish educational goals. Like my friend Abin Girma, a young woman from Ethiopia who was born deaf and blind. Abin went on to become Harvard's first blind and deaf law school graduate with the help of a digital braille device that was made available because of her disability rights. What's more, today, Abin is a disability civil rights lawyer, helping others like her have access to opportunities afforded by the ADA. No doubt about it, the ADA is opening doors to opportunities for education and employment. Find out more at disabilitycampaign.org.
Listeners are invited to an area-wide gospel gathering at the Robinson Center Church of Christ in Conway. Come and join a cappella worship, prayer, and the message of being one in Christ. Events begin at 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. on July the 9th through the 14th. The Robinson Center is located at 1505 Robinson Avenue in Conway, Arkansas. Contact info 501-231-1677.
Good afternoon and welcome to this week's edition of It Could Be You. I'm your host, John S. I'm coming to you live out of the KABF studio, and I've got to tell you, I am just completely surrounded today. I am completely surrounded by a group of folks. I don't know. We may have kind of a record of guests, of visitors, but like I said, I'm completely surrounded, but every single one of the folks who are in the studio with me are very, very committed, very dedicated to making sure that some much-needed information is going to get out. And this is information about SNAP benefits, about HUD housing, various other things that we're going to be talking about in just a moment. Very, very quickly, I wanted to let you know that I've been in touch with Carla Swanson, the Chief Executive Officer of It Could Be You. Now, she told me that the online version of the Arkansas Time After Time newsletter has been sent out, and that she was in the process of sending out the print copies of the newsletter. But for now, for those of you who will want a print copy, you need to get in touch with her right away. Now, you can do so by calling her at 501 area code 444-2828. That's 444-ATAT, or send her an email at rsol@arkansastimeaftertime.org. Make sure you spell out the word Arkansas in full. Now, also, I got a sort of a newsletter from Deanne Newell, the wonderful person who heads up the organization called Arkansas Voices for the Children Left Behind. Now, I'm sad to say that the state support that Arkansas Voices has gotten from the Department of Arkansas Workforce has ended after 6 years. And they're working on trying to match a grant of $10,000 by the 15th of August. So anyone out there, and you know the work that DNL, that Arkansas Voices for the Children Left Behind is doing, especially for the children of the incarcerated. She writes, please support our work with a contribution to Arkansas Voices, and you can send it to 1818-1818 North Taylor, room or suite number 140, and that's in Little Rock, 72207. And all donations are tax deductible. And she wanted me to make sure that everybody hears that Arkansas Voices for the Children Left Behind needs your help, and the children we serve need our experience, expertise, and stabilizing services. Now, you know, expertise, help, stabilizing services. That's the common denominator. That's the common factor that I've got for the 5 individuals. Yeah, I'm surrounded by guests today. And we're going to be talking about various things, like I said, SNAP benefit changes, HUD housing, several topics like that. So without any further ado, I'm just going to ask my guests if they would please introduce themselves, talk just about the group that they are with, and give contact information about the groups they represent. So I'm not going to even shut my eyes and randomly pick someone. I'm going to say, whoever's out there, start us off.
All right. My name is Tamiko Townley. I work with the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance. I am the SNAP and Older Adult Outreach Manager, and you can contact me at 501-399-9999, or you can go to our website, which is arhungeralliance.org.
Okay. All right.
My name is Ellie Wheeler. I work with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We're located right here in Little Rock. We also have a satellite office in Northwest Arkansas. And you can reach us by visiting our website at aradvocates.org, or you can email me at ewheeler@aradvocates.org.
Okay. And I know there are some other folks who are wanting to let us know, so go for it.
Sure. My name is Rachel Borne, and I'm the reentry program coordinator over at our house, which is located on Roosevelt Road, just a few blocks from where we're sitting right now. It's a social service campus with a shelter, a career center, a children's center, and a variety of programs. To get in contact with me about reentry services, you can contact me by phone at 501-374-7383, extension 218, or to learn more generally about our house services, you can check us out online at www.ourhouseshelter.org, or you can just stop by at 302 East Roosevelt Road.
Fair enough.
And then I'm Claire Thompson.
And I'm Jasmine Zandi.
And we're the youth ambassadors at the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance for this summer, and you can contact us on the website as well.
Fair enough. I want to welcome all of you to this week's edition of It Could Be You. Now, there are probably going to be some people out there who are listening in, oh, I've heard about Our House, or I know someone who's getting SNAP benefits, and I would like to do something. I'd like to make a difference. So, let me just throw it open to all of you, okay? If you have any information that you'd like to share about how a person, for example, could volunteer with one or perhaps all of your organizations.
Sure. So the Alliance is always looking for volunteers for many of our programs. We run many anti-hunger programs for the state through our office. So I'm going to be selfish and ask that if you're interested in volunteering for to help with SNAP and help people access the food stamp program, we are always looking for volunteers that are passionate about helping people access that program. So they can
stop by or pick up the phone or something like that?
Sure. You can email me at ttownley, T-T-O-W-N-L-E-Y, at arhungeralliance.org, or you can go to that website again, which is arhungeralliance.org.
And likewise for Our House, we have a ton of different volunteer opportunities for folks in the community. If you want to get involved with our career center, work with our kiddos, the best way to find out about all of those opportunities would be to look on our website. There's a volunteer portal where you can find out different ways to get involved and get connected with our volunteer coordinator.
Okay. And what about donating? Arkansas Hunger Relief. People are going to think, well, I've got some extra canned goods here. Or Our House. Well, they talk about kids, and my kid just outgrew diapers, so what can I do? How can I donate to any of these groups that you're here representing?
Sure. If you want to donate items or food items, I would encourage you to go to our website, the Alliance website, and contact your food bank. So there are six Feeding America food banks in the state. We have all of their contact information listed on our website. They are the ones that distribute food to people and to their member agencies or food pantries. Mm-hmm. And they're always looking for donations of items that are delicious. Mm-hmm. We also work with many homeless resource centers and other resource centers that are looking for things like rolly backpacks or suitcases or clothing, and we can connect you to them. But really, if you're hoping to donate food items, I would encourage you to contact your local food bank. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to donate money, we have that opportunity as well on our website, and I think I can speak for the advocates, Arkansas Advocates, and our house, that those are always very welcomed.
And they are tax exempt?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, one of the things that, and again, for full disclosure, yes, I get SNAP benefits. Yes, I'm like a lot of others. I get SNAP benefits, so I'm just going to kind of pick on the SNAP representative for, at first here.
Thank you.
I saw a new sort of law that's come into effect or is about to take effect, and I've been aware for quite some time that SNAP benefits have been denied to people here in Arkansas if they have a felony drug conviction.
Correct.
But that's about to be changed. How about going into some detail about that?
Absolutely. So it was, this law became law back in 1996. Mm-hmm. There was the Personal Responsibility Work Opportunity Act, and that happened in 1996, which changed a lot of things. It changed components of the TANF program, so the Temporary Aid to Needy Families program, where there was, you know, time-limited opportunities for people to access that program, and a work requirement was imposed. And then the SNAP program also underwent some changes. So one of those changes was limiting the people who were able to access that program. Mm-hmm. And this drug felony lifetime ban went into place.
And that would be even if it was just one conviction.
If it was one conviction that involved manufacture or distribution of drugs after 1996, they were lifetime banned from the program.
And once again, specifically, you said this would be for the manufacturing?
So many states, you know, chose to lifetime ban people who had felonies of all different kinds. Mm-hmm. And Arkansas kind of pulled that back a little bit and made it apply only to the people who had manufacturer distribution charges. Mm-hmm. So if you had a manufacturer distribution charge prior to 1996, you're in the clear. But if you had one of those after 1996, you would have been lifetime banned. So recently in the in our most recent legislative session, that there was, thanks to the work of advocates and Representative John Walker and Representative Bob Ballinger, we opted out of that rule. And we were one of, I believe, six states that held that rule in place. So this is a huge win. It means that many families who were not accessing the program, because we know that it wasn't just affecting the people, the individuals who had a felony conviction involving manufacturer distribution. Many families thought if they had somebody in their household, and a household under SNAP are people who purchase and prepare their meals together.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So many people thought that if there was a person in their household who had a felony conviction involving manufacturer distribution, that the entire household was ineligible for life, which was not the case. But it's really hard to broadcast that information and make sure that everybody understands the intricacies of SNAP policy. And there are all kinds of myths about who's eligible for SNAP and who's not eligible for SNAP.
Let's tackle that myth just for a second, okay? How can a person determine if he or she is eligible under this new law?
So, because, well, if we're talking about people who have a felony conviction, they would be eligible if they meet the income guidelines, if they would otherwise be eligible. So if they are receiving any other sort of means-tested benefit program, most likely those benefit amounts and the eligibility for those benefits are kind of across the board. If you're living at or below the federal poverty line, you would most likely be eligible for the program. There's different policies.
So a family could be receiving like Social Security, supplemental income, or disability, and therefore be eligible.
It's not that simple, but yes, if you are receiving benefits, you know, Social Security or disability benefits, many times those families are eligible for benefits under SNAP.
Now, clarify something for me and for everybody who's listening in. Basically, is if they have one drug conviction, manufacturing, and so on, that they're still eligible. What about if someone has had multiple convictions?
Sure. If you have had multiple convictions, you have served your time, and you are released, you are eligible for the program as long as you meet the income guidelines.
Now this is something I don't want to bring up, but I got to do it anyway. Suppose that there's someone out there who's had, say, like a previous conviction for a manufacturing, distribution, and so on. They're receiving the SNAP benefits, and bang, that same person is arrested and charged and convicted of a new drug manufacture, drug trafficking offense. What does that do?
Well, if they were receiving SNAP and then received another conviction, if they serve their time and are released and apply for benefits again, they would be eligible.
Okay, and if the person is a family member, perhaps the head of the household, and that person is again incarcerated, will the family members, the remaining family members, still be eligible for SNAP benefits?
Yeah, so anytime that there's a change in household composition, or there's a change in income or expenses, or you know, medical expenses for certain households, you would need to submit what you call a change form, which is updating the Department of Human Services, Division of County Operations. So every county has a county office that administers programs. You would have to submit that form to the DHS office of the county that you live in to let them know that that person is no longer living in your household. And that would you know, change the benefit amount. It would change potentially, you know, if you're eligible or not. So everything with SNAP is case by case, as most of the public benefits are. There's no real generalization.
No one size fits all.
No one size fits all.
Okay.
Which is why reentry services are also very complicated to make available to the general population a felony conviction, because one size does not fit all. Many people are, you know, coming to a place like our house that have different resources or different knowledge about programs. And really what I want to make sure everybody understands about this new law around SNAP is that if you previously were not eligible because of a felony conviction, if you would apply after July 15th, so starting July 16th, if you apply for SNAP benefits, or if you want the person that's been living in your household for years and years and years that has been ineligible for the program, if you want to submit a change form letting the DHS office know that they are now eligible, they will have to report the income that they're receiving.
Right.
But that person could potentially be eligible as a part of your household, and they need to access the benefits because this is money that will help you purchase food.
Now, for additional information, or if they need clarification, or if there's maybe some additional paperwork that they're supposed to submit, they can call.
They can call their local DHS office is what I would encourage them to do, because I will not have access to their case file. I'm an advocate. So if they call the DHS office and are having a hard time understanding what the expectations are to get their paperwork in, or if they're having a hard time filling out that paperwork or gathering their documents, I am more than happy to help people do that. And we have volunteers that can help with that. But ultimately, their case file is only accessible with a DHS caseworker.
Gotcha.
Please call me or the DHS office, and I will make sure to, you know, repeat our phone number and our email address.
Fair enough. Now, food, something that we all need. There's something else, particularly for people who are getting out of prison, for those returning citizens who are making that transition from one way of life back into the community. And one of the hallmarks, one of the absolute essentials, is a home, shelter. And I read, and this again is something, I guess, relatively new, and this has to do with people, even if they have a felony conviction, being eligible for HUD Section 8 housing. So how about going into that? How about taking a look at that particular need, that particular situation?
Sure.
So I can speak to that. This is Rachel, the reentry coordinator at our house. So recently, about 1 year ago, in April 2016, I think, HUD issued some new guidelines about policies based on applicants who have criminal backgrounds. And they are relatively broad, mm-hmm. and I'll just kind of outline the updates, which are most importantly that blanket bans are not allowed.
If I may kind of jump in on this, I did a little checking, and maybe this kind of summarizes it. Excuse me, and I'm quoting from an article about these new guidelines. Landlords will have to better scrutinize whether a person was arrested and if they were also convicted.
So an arrest alone cannot disqualify you. A conviction potentially could, but the landlord or leasing agent mm-hmm. or housing authority would have to link the nature of your charge to mm-hmm. a safety risk.
Or as it goes here, the severity of the crime and conviction, and I guess the time since mm-hmm. the conviction would be another factor. And in considering an applicant's housing application. And apparently, according to this, and correct me if I get this wrong, and this is going out to the property owners, to the landlords, landladies, and so on, that failure to do this, failure to follow these new guidelines, might mean the homeowner could potentially face an investigation for discrimination and ultimately civil penalties. And I think we've got a call coming in. I'll open up the phone line and let's see what we've got here. KBF, you're on the air.
Hi. Wow, you got an echo.
Is that any better?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I used to be in the real estate business, it's been about 20 years, but all those rules for landlords do not apply to people with less than four properties. You know that?
No. Would you care to?
Well, from what I understood, if you only own one or two properties, you can discriminate against anything you want.
As far as I understand the new guidelines, no one is allowed to enforce a blanket ban, meaning that if a landlord had an application or a website to lease out their properties, and at the top of the website it said misdemeanors and felonies are not allowed for tenants of this property, that would be a violation of the guideline.
Even for one property.
As far as I understand the guideline.
One single family dwelling.
Yes.
You might want to look into that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your call. Put the word out about KABF. Okay. Keep on. Any additional information?
Sure. Well, I would like to mention why these guidelines are now enforced. I think it's an important piece of this whole reentry issue, which is that I think the reason that HUD set these new policies are because, as we all know, people of color are disproportionately affected by the criminal justice system. And if a person is disqualified from housing based on their background, then that will trickle down and disproportionately affect people mm-hmm. of color and minorities, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which are a protected class through the Fair Housing Act. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so these new HUD guidelines basically link the rights of a person who might have a conviction to that Fair Housing Act.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I was asked by Carla Swanson to bring this up, that unfortunately, people who are on the state sex offender registry are still pointedly excluded from this. And from Carla and from the people within Arkansas time after time, the big push is on to get this exception to be ended. Again, because a lot of people will still take a look at someone who's been convicted of a sex offense and use wrongly the one size fits all. So I was asked to make sure that this gets brought up. So any other things that you would like to bring up? Any additional information that you think should be, oh, we got another call coming in. Hang on. KABF, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear us?
This is Oni Norman from Dumas in D.C.
Yes, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I have a question, and I'm getting back to the Elder Bridges to draw the...
Ms. Oni, before... John Kane was saying to me that in cases like this, maybe you have your radio on. If you could turn your radio down or turn it off, we can hear you.
I got it off.
That's better. That's much better.
Well, I have a question when you were discussing about the eligibility for people coming out of the system to gain SNAP. Now, and then they have to, I want to ask, when you have to volunteer at some place to receive your SNAP, do this apply to the people that come out of the system? You know, they out, they've done the time, they come out. Do they have to volunteer to get SNAP benefits?
Sure. So SNAP does have a requirement to work component, which says that if you are a person between the ages of 18 and 50.
19 and 49, yeah.
19 and 49, thereabouts, and you have no dependents and you are able-bodied, then you must complete a employment and training program in order to receive SNAP benefits.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I'm calling, because I'm in DeShea County in Dumas, and in the rural areas, when people get out of the system and it's hard for them to find places to volunteer.
Absolutely.
And they are having a struggle in these small rural areas for people of that, you know, for people like that. So that's what I wanted to find out and make it for you all to make it clear.
Sure.
It's not an exception. They have to go through the process, because even in rural, it's so limited to the places that you can find to volunteer, or they will. People that own business organizations will let you volunteer because of your records. So it seems like it puts a hardship on those people just to try to survive.
I agree with you, Oni. So I just want to make it clear that the people who are subject to this time limit rule, there are exceptions to the rule. So if somebody, unfortunately, you know, many people who are returning citizens after serving their time, they have a hard time finding housing. So a chronic homelessness or being homeless would exempt you from that time limit. So that's simply self-proclaiming to your caseworker, trying to access emergency food stamps. That's one option. The other option that you're talking about, the volunteer work, the way that that is calculated is if somebody is receiving benefits currently and they max out their 3 months in a 3-year time period, what they would be able to do is promise that they're going to find volunteer work. And the way that they calculate the number of hours that they need to volunteer is they take their benefit amount, they divide it by the state's minimum wage, and that pops out a number of hours that you must volunteer a month. So for some people who are receiving a smaller amount of benefit, if you cut that, you know, if you divide that by the state minimum wage, the number of hours that you need to volunteer, which may be the only option to meet this requirement in an area like Dumas, would be available for those applicants. And you're absolutely right. It's hard to find volunteer opportunities for people who have a felony conviction. So if you know partners in your area, or if you know churches, or if you know any resource center that would be willing to offer volunteer opportunities for people with a felony conviction, I think that that's the way that you advocate for that change. But you're right, this is a rule that is punitive, and it's hard to meet those requirements in areas where there is not an employment and training program. Where there are plenty of opportunities to volunteer. And then another huge barrier that we often hear is transportation. If you can't get to and from a volunteer site or a work site, most likely it's not because you don't want to eat and you don't want your SNAP benefit, which is the reason why you're not volunteering or working. It's because you can't get to a place to do that and meet that requirement. The other challenge I would say is literacy, which is a challenge for our entire state. But if you can't read a piece of paper that tells you that you need to report to work by a certain time, or if you have a hard time filling out the paperwork that proves that you were volunteering, all of those are challenges, and all of those are opportunities for either a SNAP application assister to help with, or somebody like Rachel at our house to help out with. And I want to make sure that Rachel gets an opportunity to talk about what our house, at least in Central Arkansas, can do for those individuals.
And well, before you do that, give your contact information again, so that anyone out there who's listening, that if you have information, about a group or someone out there who's willing to provide transportation, anything, they know who to contact, when, you know, which group and so on. So if you would, like you did at the top of the program, give your contact information again.
Sure. So the general line to get in touch with any program at our house is 501-374-7383, and you'll be prompted to enter a number and get channeled to housing or career center or children's programs.
And for the Hunger Relief Alliance?
Sure. The Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance office number is 501-399-9999, or you can absolutely call my work cell, which is 501-650-1781, or email me at ttownley@arhungeralliance.org.
Okay.
And we're really lucky because we actually have a SNAP representative from DHS who visits our career center on the Our House campus once a week. And so that person can help speed up an application. They can help answer any questions and assist you in filling out paperwork. They are there every Wednesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Also, when I mentioned the requirements to work program and Tomiko elaborated about volunteering, Our House is a designated site where you can get your employment and training requirement in order to receive benefits if you're not employed, as well as Goodwill. I think any workforce center throughout the state, even in small towns, DWS will often have some type of workforce center, and through that entity you could find an employment and training program to join.
Okay,
thank you
for the question, Oni.
Thank you,
and for full disclosure, I want to say while she's still with me that Oni Norman is going to be my guest on It Could Be You on Wednesday the 26th of this month. We're going to be talking, like she was last time, about various issues and concerns in the Arkansas Delta. Oni Norman, I'm looking forward already to having you with me on the program again, and thank you very, very much for your call.
Okay, and thank you.
Talk to you again.
All right, bye.
We're just a little ways past the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take about a one-minute break, and we're going to be coming back in. The phone line will be open after the break, so anyone out there with comments, questions, the number to call is 501, if you need the area code, 433-0088. But hang in there. You're listening to this week's edition of It Could Be You. We'll be back with you in about a minute.
Profile America, Wednesday, July 12th. It took a while after the invention of the gas-powered automobile by Carl Benz in Germany in 1886 for someone to steal the wheels. The first stolen car is said to be of a French aristocrat's Peugeot in Paris in 1896. In this country, the first auto theft is believed to have occurred in St. Louis in 1905. But this slow beginning has become an all-too-robust present. With July and August being the peak months for automotive thefts, this is National Vehicle Theft Protection Month. Nationally, a motor vehicle is stolen on average every 44 seconds, and safeguarding against this threat contributes to the insurance industry's annual revenue of over $1.6 trillion. You can find more facts about America's people, places, and economy from the American Community Survey at census.gov.
And welcome back to this week's edition of It Could Be You. I said at the top of the hour, I am completely surrounded, but I'm really completely and happily surrounded by several individuals who are dedicated to making sure that particularly for people who have been incarcerated and they're returning to the community, well, there's some changes, beneficial ones that have been made. And we were talking about a couple of them before we had the break. And many thanks to the folks who called in. Once again, the phone line is open, 433-0088. But I'm going to once again ask my guests to introduce themselves. And I think they may have like one or two more follow-ups that they want to make about the SNAP benefits or perhaps the new HUD housing guidelines.
Go ahead. Oh, my name is Tamiko Townley. I work with the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance. Our website is arhungeralliance.org. Our phone number is 501-399-9999.
My name is Ellie Wheeler. I'm with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. You can get involved by going to our website at aradvocates.org or calling us at 501-371-9678.
And I'm Rachel Bornay. I run the reentry program at our house. You can contact me at 501-374-7383, extension 218.
And I'm Claire Thompson.
And Jasmine Zandi.
And we're the Summer Youth Ambassadors at the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance, and you can also find more information on our website.
And I'm going to be picking on them just a bit. Rachel, I think you had a little bit of follow-up that you wanted to bring up about the HUD.
Sure. I wanted to share a couple of resources for people who suspect they've been discriminated against because of their criminal background when it comes to applying for housing. Like our caller mentioned earlier, the guidelines are less stringent with private landlords. You have a lot more of an opportunity to file a suit or contest discrimination if it happens through a governmentally funded housing authority through Section 8. But in any case, if you suspect foul play, you can contact the Center for Arkansas Legal Services if you are in Pulaski County, which has a helpline. And they deal with any type of civil lawsuit for low-income Arkansans. And that hotline number is 1-800-9-LAW-AID, which is 1-800-952-9243. Another advocacy group for housing issues is the Fair Housing Commission, and their number is 501-682-3247.
Okay. Now, before moving on, I should have asked this at the top of the hour like normally, but I better late than never, as the saying goes. You're representing several different groups. Are any of your groups having any events that are coming up in the not too distant future? Anything like, say, a meet and greet or fundraiser? Anything like I said, better late than never.
So the Hunger Relief Alliance is having an event on July 22nd, mm-hmm. and this is called the Watermelon Crawl. Mm-hmm. This will be our 10th annual Watermelon Crawl, and it's a gleaning project, meaning that you'll be picking watermelons, and all of those will go to local food banks. And we hope to hit 10 million pounds at this event, so all help is needed. Anyone is welcome. There's no registration.
Now, you say gleanings. Now, let me talk about this just for a second, and correct me if I get any of this wrong. A gleaning is when a person, a farmer, for example, has food crops, and these and some of the crops are not bought, say, by a big distributor or a purchaser because of look, shape, whatever reason. These are still left in the field, and people come in, say maybe they represent a gleaning group, one that was on the program some time ago called the Society of St. Andrew. They go in and they get these food crops, and they distribute them to various food pantries, or I understand that maybe in some cases directly to the people who need that. Am I kind of correct on that?
Yes, sir.
Well, what else would you have to say maybe associated with this watermelon crawl or any meet and greet events or anything like that?
So the watermelon crawl will actually be you'll be gleaning, but it's also games, fun, meeting people, stuff like that. Just a fun event. Mm-hmm.
It's also a great way to volunteer, and most gleaning projects are. They happen all throughout the year. There's always something to harvest, always mm-hmm. something to plant. Mm-hmm. So if you're ever looking for any volunteer opportunities, it's mm-hmm. a great way to go. We've been gleaning a bit this summer, and it's actually really fun. Mm-hmm. We've been picking corn and planting some cantaloupe. So
You mentioned that you're with a group within, what, the Hunger Alliance again, called Youth Ambassadors. Is that a particular volunteer group now?
So it's not a volunteer group. It's kind of like a summer internship.
Uh-huh.
We're interning for No Kid Hungry, which is a national campaign. And then there are two ambassadors in most states with an alliance type group. So if anyone would like to get involved, you can find information by contacting the alliance. But you apply through the national campaign, and then you're placed within the state.
Is that how basically both of you got involved? And if you're wanting someone to get involved, do they contact, say, you directly? Do they contact, like, the Hunger Relief Alliance directly? Or is there another, like, a partner, an allied group that they could call?
So the Alliance posts the positions every summer, or like right before every summer, so that anybody who's interested could apply for that program. And I would just say, if you're interested in serving the summer with the Alliance and learning about statewide anti-hunger work and policy surrounding that work and getting involved with gleaning and being an advocate for our state's needs, that keeping an eye on the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance website or Facebook is a good way to keep your finger on the pulse.
Now, I'm also going to have to pick on someone else who's here, someone who's representing Arkansas Advocates. And refresh my memory again about Arkansas Advocates and how your organization is involved with the other organizations that are represented here today.
That is such a great question. We, at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, we take a little bit of a different approach. We spend a lot of our time up at the Capitol and, in fact, work very closely with the Hunger Relief Alliance and other groups like Our House to make sure that legislation and bills that are being considered keep in mind the families and kids that will be affected by those changes. In a way, Our House and Hunger Relief Alliance is a little bit more boots on the ground, and, and we are up at the Capitol, but we do work very closely with those partner groups.
Covering as many fronts as possible.
Right. So Arkansas Advocates covers a lot of different issue areas, but one of the really important ones deals with family economic security, and of course, SNAP and food programs fall well within that.
Well, and since we're kind of on this tack, this is something else I had hoped to ask, but maybe again, now's the right time to do it. Would any of you like to kind of give a shout out to any groups that you're partnered with that were not able to make it today?
Sure. I was able to interview Morgan Holliday with Compassion Works for All. And I tried to, she is a wealth of knowledge, but she definitely gave me some action steps for people who are interested in being involved and supporting the population that we're talking about. And one of the easiest and cheapest and, an activity that makes a huge impact is writing letters. So for people who are currently incarcerated, many of the things that they want to learn about could be easily found out through a Google search, but they don't have access to that. So having interactions with people who are not incarcerated and who are able to answer questions and just keep their hearts and minds in a better place is a really great opportunity to volunteer and, very low cost. But I think that Rachel also has some good volunteer or partner agencies that she wants to give a shout out to.
And I will say quickly about the letter writing. Just this past week, Arkansas Department of Corrections announced that inmates will no longer receive the envelopes that carry their correspondence because of high instances of drugs finding their way into correctional facilities. So it is important, if you would like to correspond with someone who is incarcerated, that is wonderful. But make sure that your return information is on the letter itself.
The letter, the forms.
Exactly. And we receive a lot of inmate mail at Our House and are always happy to send out resources. We respond to every letter that we get. And there is a reentry VISTA who works closely with me in our reentry program. Her name is Miranda Deaton, and she responds to every single letter. She's excellent. And that's an example of a great partner that we have, which is the AmeriCorps program that provides national service workers to us at Our House. We could not do what we do without VISTAs. I'm sure the Hunger Relief Alliance has worked with AmeriCorps as well, so that's an important program.
Now, we talked in the first half of the program, and once again, the phone line is open, 433-0088, for anyone who wants to call in with a story to share, question to ask, and so on. Now, we talked about finding help to get food on the table, to find a place to stay. But for a number of people who are finishing their sentences, these returning citizens are coming back into the community, there's the, if you will, the third basic need, and that is employment. That is employment, okay? But I've talked with people who have been incarcerated. I correspond to several people who are incarcerated. Several people that I know, such as within Arkansas Time After Time, they carry on this correspondence. And one of the things that is very, very frequently, very regularly brought up, well, my TE date is coming up pretty soon, but I don't have a job waiting for me. How can I find work once I'm on the outside? Is there anybody out there? Are there any employment agencies out there that are going to work with someone who has a felony conviction?
So this is a huge topic among the people that we serve. I think finding employment is probably the biggest barrier that people face, just because it connects to so many different areas of their life. And employment discrimination is very common in Arkansas. An employer has the right to disqualify a person because of a criminal background, but it's really important for applicants to know their rights. And so the first step a person can take is to simply obtain a copy of their criminal history, mm-hmm. because when a person is involved in the criminal justice system, they might not understand what charges resulted on their criminal history. Mm-hmm. And often applications will ask you to explain the nature of your charges, mm-hmm. and might not disqualify you because of the charges that you have, but because you inaccurately listed what you have. So they serve as kind of truth tests. So the first thing you can do is arm yourself with the knowledge of exactly what charges you have, mm-hmm, the dates you caught them, etc.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that might be a good first step is if on these application forms a state entity or, say, a private concern has taken the advice of so many others who can say been there, done that, and they have gone on ahead to ban the box.
Absolutely. And this
now, by that, you know, it's the question that's on there: have you ever been convicted of a felony?
So our reentry program at our house is funded by the City of Little Rock's Department of Community Programs, and City Hall has banned the box, so that mm-hmm. means that applicants applying to positions funded through the city should not be discriminated against initially, mm-hmm. will not be asked necessarily during that first point of contact, that mm-hmm. they have the fair right to an interview. Mm-hmm. However, private employers have not followed suit.
Not all of them, for sure.
Right. Okay.
And I would say for private employers that, you know, if you know people who have the ability to employ mm-hmm. whoever they would like to, mm-hmm. To encourage them to think about this population, mm-hmm. one of the biggest reasons why recidivism exists.
Reoffense.
Thank you very much. Is because they need employment, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they need money to be able to survive. So
study after study, research after research has said that if a person with a felony conviction has a stable home life and a stable job, guess what? They don't reoffend as a rule.
Right.
Exactly. And I think, like Tomiko said, the business community can lead the charge here in really shifting perceptions about people coming out of prison and creating a more stable economy.
And it would be an easier burden on the Arkansas taxpayer.
Amen. It's expensive to incarcerate folks.
Okay. Well, now let's go a little bit further, okay? A person returns from incarceration, okay? Well, I like what you do, but you're not qualified yet. You don't have a GED. You don't have a certificate that you went through this program. What can any of the groups that you represent or are partnered with, what can be done to address those particular needs?
Well, there are a number of places here in Little Rock that you might call one-stop shops. So those are mm-hmm. community centers, career centers, where a person can go, enroll, and access a variety of services. Mm-hmm. The career center in our house is definitely one of those. Mm-hmm. We have four key elements to our programming. We have education, employment and training, mm-hmm. health and wellness, and financial empowerment. And mm-hmm. so a person can walk in the door, they can get plugged in with our GED program, mm-hmm. they can work with an employment coach, they can attend a financial empowerment class taught by a volunteer from Arvest mm-hmm. or another mm-hmm. institution, they can attend a Cooking Matters class that's staffed by a Hunger Relief Alliance volunteer, mm-hmm. all in the same spot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other organizations that are similar to that would be Goodwill mm-hmm. and the Workforce Center mm-hmm. on University.
Gotcha.
And I think that you had a partner last week on the radio show that would be another
yes.
great resource to
grid.
Look for some
the
of those
grid.
Employment or training mm-hmm. opportunities. Mm-hmm. So thegoodgrid.org, mm-hmm. I believe, is their website. And
here in Pulaski County, Robert Combs is still busy with the Compassion Resource Directory. So there's another resource that you can turn to. And let me put this out for everybody. If your organization, if you're, say, employment agency, you want to help folks who have gotten out of prison, and you're not listed on resources such as the Compassion Resource Directory or the Good Grid, get in contact with those groups and say, well, I want to pass along my information. This is what I'm able to do. This is what I'm not able to do, and so on down the line. Because the more information that's out there, the more resources that are there, the easier it's going to be for people who are getting out of prison. Now, and I'd like to kind of shift gears, shift directions. We've been concentrating a lot on what your various groups do for the inmates, for the returning citizen, okay? But what about while their family member, their parent, their son, et cetera, is incarcerated? Are there any particular programs, for example, with Arkansas Advocates, are there any particular programs that are geared to helping the children, the family members, while that family member is incarcerated, in addition to what we've been talking about?
I think the program that, or the organization that you mentioned in the beginning of the show mm-hmm. is one of the leading partners that's focusing on the families and the children of people who are currently in prison.
Okay.
I know that our house does work with families. And
sure. So that's a big focus of ours, is working with the entire family. We call it the two-generation approach. And mm-hmm. we have a program called the Central Arkansas Family Stability Institute that works with families who are previously homeless or at risk of becoming homeless and have a child between the ages of infant and 18 in the home. And many of those families have a relative who is currently incarcerated, and so they're receiving mm-hmm. services mm-hmm. through a case manager.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to throw this open to all of you. One thing that you had brought up a little bit earlier was, you know, being able to work with the legislators to change the SNAP opt-out policy. I've talked about this with a lot of groups who have been on It Could Be You. But I think it needs to be done again and again and again. Why is it important for someone, maybe a family who has a member who's incarcerated, someone who is homeless, why is it important that these individuals contact our legislators?
That's a great question. It's always really important for legislators to hear from their constituents. Mm-hmm. And you would be shocked if you found out how few people actually do bother to develop a relationship with their mm-hmm. representatives and give them a call and let them know what their concerns are. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll actually hear representatives and senators say, I've been hearing from my constituents, and what that means is they had four phone calls, and that's what it took to change their mind. So, mm-hmm. if you care about these issues, no matter what your status is, I really encourage you to get involved with Arkansas Advocates. You can go to our website, aradvocates.org, and click on Get Involved, and that will allow you to be kept up to date on the issues that we work on at the Capitol. And yes.
And let me add something to that. legislators, as you were saying, they want to hear from their constituents. But I brought this up a number of times, but it bears repeating. If the lawmaker, if your legislator, your state representative, your state senator, your congressman, your U.S. senator, if you don't provide that person with your views, your opinions, your take, if they hear nothing, that legislator, that lawmaker, that public servant is going to conclude, well, all my constituents are happy with this bill.
Sure.
And it could be something very, very bad in the long run or the short run. But if they don't hear from you, if they don't hear from you, a bad piece of legislation will very likely become law.
Yes. I'd like to add to that because I totally agree. And sometimes you are really doing your representative a favor by calling and letting them know how you feel, because sometimes your opinion and even their opinion is not popular. But if they can say, I've been getting calls all day about this, my constituents are furious, you know, I know that some of you might disagree with this, it gives them the cover to be able to say, this is something that I just can't vote for. And that makes it a lot easier for them to have that backup.
Totally. And I would say I've just recently been more involved because of some of the policies that affect SNAP, but then also impact my family and my friends. And I kind of was waiting for somebody to tell me about a town hall, or waiting for my legislators to come to my community and ask about my opinions or my neighbor's opinions. And that, I think, is foolish. I now recognize that it is my job, and I need to go out of my way to make sure that I tell my story and that I represent the people that I'm serving, because I have a little bit of a platform comparatively, and I need to not wait for them to approach me. So your story is important. Your perspective is needed. Your opinion is needed. And the policies that affect you could potentially completely change if you become involved. So please, please reach your legislators, and we can help you do that.
And it's particularly important to speak up on issues relating to reentry, because people who are behind bars are silenced and marginalized by virtue of the fact that they're incarcerated.
Your voice, where you are able to say, been there, done that.
Right. Yeah. Sure, absolutely. If you have recently come out of prison, you too need to share your experience. That's the most valuable thing you can do to really shift the policy.
Yeah, you've got the authority that a lot of other people don't have.
Absolutely.
And let me take this one step further as well, that people who have had a felony conviction, once you're off paper, you're no longer under probation, parole, all the fines and the fees have been paid for, state law says you can register to vote. And not only do you register, maybe you yourself are not eligible to vote, but what the hell is wrong with you telling your family members to get out there and to register to vote, and then, by heavens, vote?
That's right. And if you have a misdemeanor conviction, you can vote from jail. You have to vote on an absentee ballot, but having a misdemeanor conviction, if you're detained or still on community supervision, you still have the right to vote.
Okay. Now, we're almost out of time, so let me just one more time ask, if you would please, give the relevant contact information. Certainly for the groups that you're representing, but if there's another, say, umbrella organization that you'd like to pass along about, at least the telephone number.
You can visit us, Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, at aradvocates.org, or you can call us at 501-371-9678, and there's plenty of resources on that website. If you don't know who your representatives are, you can find that out on our website and learn about all of our issues that we are working on.
Okay.
Awesome. And if you want to get in touch with the Alliance, our website is arhungeralliance.org. You can call us at 501-399-9999. Or you can email me directly at ttownley@arhungeralliance.org.
And if you want to get involved at Our House, you can check out our website, www.ourhouseshelter.org. For reentry services, you can contact me directly, 501-374-7383, extension 218. We also host a monthly open house the first Thursday of every month at noon. You can RSVP to that on our website.
Okay. Dr. Ed Blair is waiting with bated breath and a chime ringing instrument, ready to take over in just the next little while. We've only scratched the surface of some of these areas, and I'm going to see if I can do some group arm twisting in the next little bit to have these individuals, these wonderful people, to come back on the program and talk some more about these and various other relevant, very relevant topics. But between now and then, oh, and by the way, next week, we're going to kind of continue on a similar line. The people with the SHIP office, this is with the Insurance Commission, they were on not too long ago. They loved it.